Hello, everyone. This is America Garcia Grewal, and you're listening to a new podcast episode brought to you by the Democrats Abroad Hispanic Caucus. For those of you not familiar with our caucus, we advocate to policymakers on issues important to Latino communities. We support Democratic Latinx candidates running for various offices, and we encourage our members and other Americans living abroad to vote in every U.S. election that they're eligible to vote in. So I'm your host, America Garcia Grewal. I'm a Mexican-American living in Fiji, and I vote in the border town of Eagle Pass, Texas. With me today is my co-host and brother, Michael Garcia.
Yeah, and I'm also Mexican-American living in Toronto, Canada, and I also vote in the border town of Eagle Pass, Texas.
On today's podcast, we're discussing immigration, and our guest is the Deportation Defense Hotline Coordinator for United We Dream. Bienvenido, and welcome to Cynthia Garcia.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on, Cynthia. Could you tell us just a little bit about United We Dream and expound upon your role within the organization?
Yes. So United We Dream is the largest youth nonprofit organization for immigrant rights. It's led by undocumented and documented immigrants. And particularly, I have the privilege to work on the deportation defense team, directly supporting immigrant families experiencing separation through all the policies and all the laws are currently criminalizing migration. And I'm very grateful to be able to share a little bit of all their stories that come through our hotline, but also all the stories that are being directly impacted through all these policies.
Great, thanks for that. So Cynthia, from what we can see in the news here and abroad, it appears that there's currently a war on immigrants in the US, especially immigrants of color. It seems there's just really horrible rhetoric against sanctuary cities and even American citizens who are of Hispanic descent being treated like undocumented criminals and so forth. Can you tell us what you're seeing on the ground there as far as immigrants feeling welcomed into U.S. communities?
Yes, I think you bring a really good point. I think currently the environment and the sentiment against immigrants has turned to so toxic that it's not longer just affecting undocumented immigrants, but just anyone who looks like me, who looks like you, you know, folks that are born in cities with a large majority of Latinx descent. And the truth is that because the U.S. has been such a leading power, the sentiment is also growing worldwide. And one of the best examples to put would be the attack of El Paso that was targeting people of color, people who were migrants, people who were, you know, considered Mexicans, and particularly because El Paso is such a diverse city, was the target of one of the most horrific attacks against immigrants. And I think that really speaks volumes on this rhetoric that not only the current administration has been driving, but other world leaders have been driving against people of color, indigenous people, poor people, really building into this white supremacy sentiment that is taking over. Unfortunately, not just within our borders, but outside of the U.S., because we've seen that same sentiment be replicated in other countries like Brazil, where indigenous people are also being attacked. And then just thinking of the Muslim ban on how it's keeping people out because of their religious beliefs. And I think it's a time where we cannot afford not to be proactively calling that out, but also taking action against that rhetoric.
Yeah, there do definitely seem to be a lot of parallels that you pointed out in other countries. And this is a good segue to the next question, which is, in your opinion, how has the Trump administration's job performance been on directing the Customs and Border Protection, as well as Immigration and Customs Enforcement federal agencies in handling the DACA program and the overall issue of immigration?
Yes, and I would like to share just this particularly is very personal. I am a DACA recipient myself, and I think the attack on DACA is just another extensive overuse of power from the current administration of terrorizing communities, right? I think we've seen since his takeover that all the policies that have been pushed have been attacks on people of color, people who are not wealthy or people who he keeps trying to erase. And I think one of the biggest threats against DACA is not only that it will be funneling thousands of people into the deportation machine that he has cranked up to a record high, right, with over 52,000 people detained every day. But I think it's also another way that the narrative of creating a path to citizenship has never been real. This is about criminalizing people and how do we strip people of their status How do we continue to drive policies that other people who don't look like him, who are not part of this narrative of the white supremacy that he has continued to build his platform on? And I think DACA should not be seen as a different attack. It is one of the ways that he will continue to perpetrate terror, divisive narrative, and criminalize people who are not white.
And so just going off script just a tiny bit, is there a country or a program within a country that you think is doing well at immigration? That's doing, let's say, there are a lot of people who will say, well, if people are coming here illegally, they shouldn't be here, but maybe there's a more humanitarian sort of program in place. Is there any country you could tell me about, or what would be an ideal way of going about this process?
Yes, I think when we think about being radical in a way of like how we think about immigration, right? And I say radical because it's the word that people have tried to use when we think of open borders. I think immigration didn't become such a national security threat per se until after the 9/11 incident that really like changed the way the United States saw people of color from other countries. I think prior to that, there was also other faulty ways in which this nation was founded and the sole purpose of dictating who was worthy of citizenship. I think it's really hard to point out which particular country is doing really well. But I think as an alternative, the United States can also be that the driver of change of how they continue to drive this narrative. Immigration has provided the United States as a country the world will power that they really have and have been leading with. And I think the United States needs to live up to the promise, right? To the promise that you should be having freedom to express yourself, to challenge the democracy that we live in, and to understand that criminalizing people for migrating, it's going to continue to harm people because migration, it's happening internally, it's happening externally. We can connect that to climate change. We can connect that to socioeconomics. And the more that we try to push this criminal concept against immigration, the harder we're making it for people to really be able to thrive. And I think that is the critical point where the United States can be the leading country on how we see migration, because they have benefited so much throughout the country's history.
100%. And also in that vein, we know that there are some employers in the U.S., and I know you had done an interview previously where you had talked about Koch Foods and that raid on the plant. But the question is, what can we do to spread the word of what immigrants' rights are? As many people, or is there may be some people who are undocumented and work in the United States.
Yeah, I think sustain connected and engage in the conversations that are happening, not just within the U.S. And I know for folks abroad, sometimes, you know, the access to all these resources and materials and organizations can be quite difficult. But I think being able to create a direct communication with organizations like United We Dream, who are offering those trainings, who also offer support of like how to be a good ally, we are able to look, you know, into how important it really is to speak about the truth and the reality that people in detention centers are living. We cannot become numb to the news of people dying in detention. And we cannot become numb to the reality that families are being separated, not only at the border, but throughout the country because of law enforcement collaboration with ICE, an agency that has continuously worked towards criminalizing people, but also just terrorizing them. I think Mississippi is a great example of how you try to break down community and the attack on over 600 families in such a small radio, right? I think that it's bold, and it's not something that we can forget, because those families today are still living the aftermath of that raid and the legal burden that takes. But not only that, having a loved one in a detention center and being able to see the news and seeing how people are dying in there, there is secondary trauma that these people are living every day. And people like me who are also at risk with this DACA Supreme Court case that is pending, like it is the time that we need to step up and really be the allies that are going to lift up the voices of the people directly impacted, but also, you know, mobilize in a way that we're able to support, not just verbally, but in action, in the way that we vote, in the way that we support candidates that are also supporting freedom to move and freedom to stay and humanize and dignify and bring back the dignity of all immigrants.
Most definitely. And to talk about the detention centers, like less than an hour from my hometown, there was a detention center in Carrizo Springs, Texas, for the migrant youth. And something that really hit hard related to that is just, what, 50 years before, during World War II, Immigration and Naturalization Service had leased over 200 acres to have the Japanese internment camp as well. So it's really frustrating, especially in the U.S., where there's the Holocaust, where so many people came to the United States as a safe haven, and then seeing kind of like history repeating itself. Do you have any feelings about that? I know you've already kind of told me that, but do you see this history repeating itself, or what are your feelings on that?
Yeah, and I think this is really difficult for me. I'm originally from Oklahoma, and I'm not sure if you may have gotten to grasp about a July 20th action that we held a rally and a protest and literally shut down a military base, which has a historical context of being a concentration camp, not just for Japanese Americans, but also for Native American folks as the first boarding school. Lawton, Oklahoma was like the epicenter of all this traumatic experiences like hundreds of years ago, right? And so we were able to show up with indigenous people who were standing up in solidarity with us. We were able to show up with our brothers and sisters and Japanese Americans who are calling these detention centers what they are, right? Another modern version of a concentration camp, a for-profit, you know, trauma institution. And so I think it's really powerful to call it what it is. I think it's powerful to understand that the things that are quote unquote legal don't mean they're right, right? Like that's not the right thing to do. And that the reality is that as a nation, we still haven't been able to have conversations on how to truly heal and how to really move past these narratives of criminalizing other people. Because what's happened is that we didn't learn when the genocide of indigenous people happened. So then we picked a different target, which was our Japanese Americans. And then we moved from them because we found a way to somehow, quote unquote, legalize them. And then we moved into brown and black bodies for incarceration. And now the most profitable business is detention centers, which the same people who have been able to profit from all the trauma of previous generations are the same people who are becoming wealthy now from family detention or the detention of youth and for indefinite detention that currently is, you know, perpetrating trauma on these generations and generations to come, as like our youth and our children are experiencing family separation right here in our front doors.
Most definitely. And I'm just taking a moment to take that all in because there's a lot to unpack there. Man, thanks for sharing that.
I'm really struck by how close to home all of this hits because, you know, we lived in Lawrence, which is the home of Haskell Indian Nations, which started life as a school for removed Native children who moved from their homes. And, you know, we grew up on the U.S.-Mexico border and I lived in Germany. And like you were saying, a lot to unpack there. But I'm also just kind of like struck by how many times this lesson has been taught and how little we've taken away as a nation and as a country as global citizens. So yeah, this is really something.
Yeah. And I think that responsibility, right? It's something that we have to do collectively. I think we can continue to talk about the administration, but I think is the root of our history as a nation, but also that silo thinking that we're somehow separated from the rest of the world when we have advocated and we have really tried to guide how the rest of the world sees us. So I think with that responsibility and that promise at hand, like we need to challenge the way that we're driving these conversations. And we need to also acknowledge that we are part of a larger, broader movement beyond the borders that we so passionately try to draw in ourselves because we are global citizens, right? We owe it to the rest of other countries to be very mindful of the actions that we're taking because we're not the only ones that are suffering internally. All these different generations are seeing what's happening inside of the U.S. People are leaving the U.S. and people are coming back into the U.S. and they're seeing all this trauma being perpetrated on this group of people. And I think we owe it to ourselves to really challenge how we want the world to see us and how we want to continue to lead the world.
Cynthia, I have one last question. How can voters support you and how can voters support progress in this area?
Yes, that is a very great question. I think one of the best ways, right, is maintaining informed on who are those candidates that are supporting a humane and a dignified way of approaching immigration, not just as bargaining chips for political gain, but truly seeing the humanity and also thinking of the responsibility that we as allies have privileged, that people who are undocumented, people who may have been stripped of the right to vote, people who may not have a place on the voting poll for one reason or another, like, we owe it to them to really vote an alignment to bringing back their peace of mind, to ending this nonstop trauma inflicting machine that is the deportation machine. And then ultimately endorsing and really advocating for families to remain together, to be able to have the freedom to move and thrive without being criminalized because they're seeking for a better future. And lastly, staying tuned. November 12th is when we're expecting the Supreme Court to take on the case for DACA. It is not just for DACA recipients, but it's another form on which this administration is currently attacking immigrants, people of color, and anyone who is trying to, you know, remain in this country that they already call home. I think it's crucial that we become more aware, more informed, and more engaged to truly be able to step up to the plate.
Cynthia, thank you so much for joining us today. So this has really been wonderful to hear you share your thoughts with us and talking to us about immigration. So if caucus members want to follow your activity, where can they find you on social media?
Yes, so unitedwedream.org. I actually have a website too that you can follow me on Twitter or on Instagram. I think my Twitter is like CynthiaX09. And just full disclosure, I'm always speaking on behalf of my immigrant community, local groups, because that is where I started. And then also with United We Dream, where we do trainings on how to be a better ally, know your rights trainings, and then just other ways for folks to stay engaged.
I also want to echo my sister Medica's appreciation for you taking the time to join us today. Really appreciated hearing directly from a DACA recipient who's making a really big difference in our community. It resonated with me hearing how you tell us to call migrant youth detention centers what they are, which is concentration camps. As I mentioned, this is especially hit home with the Carrizo Springs Detention Center and the World War II era Japanese internment camps in Crystal City, both just an hour from me and my sister's childhood home in Eagle Pass, Texas. As a reminder to our listeners, Cynthia Garcia is the Deportation Defense Hotline Manager for United We Dream, the nation's largest immigrant youth-led community. We just heard her thoughts on what her organization does and what they're fighting for, and she informed us of what's been happening with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency under Trump's anti-persons of color agenda. Please make sure you check out democratsabroad.org/HC to keep up with all of our news updates, candidate endorsements, podcast episodes, and more. For our bilingual listeners, check out this reminder message from our colleague in Madrid, Carlos, about the opportunity to cast your vote from any location in the world.
Hola, mi nombre es Carlos Colau. Soy votante en el estado de Florida y soy miembro de Democrats Abroad Spain y de Democrats Abroad Hispanic Caucus. Espero que hayan disfrutado de nuestro podcast. Recordad, si usted es un ciudadano estadounidense viviendo en el extranjero, solo tienen que ir a la página web votefromabroad.org para solicitar su boleta electoral y poder participar en las elecciones correspondientes a su estado, y especialmente en las próximas elecciones presidenciales. Muchas gracias y espero que sigan disfrutando de los podcasts de Democrats Abroad Hispanic Caucus.